great tone. Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
Tonight on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast, we are proud to welcome Bruce Bouye from Racer X. He is also a world-renowned recording engineer, producer, and mixer of such bands as Buck Cherry and Motorhead. Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proudly sponsored by Sweetwater Musical Instruments and Pro Audio and our good friends at Guitar Hummer at GuitarHummer.com. And now here are your hosts, Jeff Flo to the Izzo Floro, and Scott, I have nothing to say in the middle, Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show tonight. We have a great show tonight. This is going to be a lot of fun. But first, Scott, what have you been up to this week?
Well, 21 videos of NAMM videos in so far. So I think I've got 11 Jim Dunlop, all their new pedals, Taylor.
Yeah, Dunlop PRS. Came out with a little baby Univibe. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Really, really, really cool.
Yeah, the Univibe and the Clyde McCoy Wah are my two favorites from them. Pretty exciting. And then, of course, the Taylor guitars, pretty cool. We've got the PRS, and then coming up this week, I'll be finishing Martin guitars with Dick Boak, which is really cool. Orange amps with their head engineer, Aide Emsley, which will be cool.
Mm-hmm.
And just whatever else I can get done.
We did shoot a lot of footage at the show, so that should be good. And I still haven't posted my pictures yet of what I took on the day you were gone. I actually went running around. There was some really nice, especially in the acoustic guitar field, the woods they're using alternative woods that are just beautiful guitars. So we will get into that. But now let's get into our show. Should we go to break first and then come back and introduce our guest? We'll be right back in a second, and then we will be talking to Bruce Bouye. There's a product out called Guitar Hummer that's designed to give you vintage sound without the vintage weight. We all know the more a guitar is played, the better the sound. Guitar Hummer is a guitar stand that simulates play by sending gentle vibrations through your guitar as it sits. Swap your guitar stand for Guitar Hummer, and in just a few weeks, you will notice deeper, richer tone and improved sustain. But don't take our word for it. Try it for 60 days, and if you don't notice a marked difference, return it for a full refund. Go to GuitarHummer.com for more information or to purchase.
Hi, this is Aaron Raby, your resident guitars and amps geek at Sweetwater Sound. 1-800-222-4700 or catch us on the web at www.sweetwater.com. Sweetwater is proud to partner with The Flow in bringing you the latest and greatest in all guitar-related things, be it tone, be it artists and musicians, their secrets on their tone, amplification, and live performance. We at Sweetwater are just as passionate as the folks on The Flow in bringing you what we consider to be the best in pro audio equipment and guitar and PA gear. Give us a call and we'll discuss gear whenever you like. The number here is 800-222-4700. And again, you can catch us on the web at www.sweetwater.com. I'm Aaron Raby, and thanks again for listening.
All right, everyone, you are listening to Jeff and Scott on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, and I'm Paul Reed Smith from PRS Guitars, and that's kind of what's going on. Enjoy the show.
Welcome back to Flow Guitar Enthusiast. That was Paul Reed Smith. We had a fun time shooting some of his new guitars and his new amps. They were pretty interesting.
Yeah, man.
Anyway, but let's get on with it. I'm going to play a clip, and then I'm going to introduce it pretty much defines. It says it all. And then we'll go ahead and I'll introduce our guest, Bruce. But here, this is a clip of solo, I think, live from Racer X.
Yeah.
Bruce, welcome to the show.
Hey, glad to be here.
Oh, man. I've been going through all the clips the last couple of days, and it's just amazing all the breadth of the work that you've done.
Oh, well, thank you.
And it's kind of interesting, and this is one of the things I'm really excited about the show is, being a guitar player, he's in front of the microphone. He's working on – he's got a great sound, great tone, but also he's an accomplished engineer. You won a Grammy for doing for the Motorhead single Whiplash, which was part of the Metallica the Ultimate Tribute in 2005. So here you have a person that knows tone in front of the mic and behind the console. So welcome to the show. This is going to be fun because we're going to dig in deep on how he gets his sound.
Yeah, going deep.
Going deep. Now, let me ask you, let's just start with that clip that we just played. Hmm. What were you using back then?
We're going way back on that one.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, on that particular recording, we were using Ampeg V4Bs.
Oh, wow.
And that is actually an old bass head. It's the smaller version of an SVT, but you wouldn't know by the weight of it if you had to carry one around.
Mm-hmm.
It almost took two people,
mm-hmm.
and it had a lot of tubes. So it was a big tube sound, very clean, and in conjunction, we were using an ADA MP1 preamp.
Oh, wow.
And occasionally, I would run a tube screamer. And it would get really loud, and it was really clean. But the most amazing thing about it is that it had the same sort of EQ matrix as what an SVT had. So you had the rocker switches at the top that would give you sub and up to for each frequency, you would have low rocker switch, mm-hmm. mid, and highs. And it was phenomenal. The EQ headroom and the volume of it were just stunning. So, and back then, back in the 80s, you could find them for $250 in the recycler.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's funny. At NAMM, they were showing their new V. It's the V4B is their bass head.
Right.
So it's basically the same amp. It just doesn't have reverb.
Right.
And I was with Steve Hunter. And Steve Hunter was talking to them about, I use that amp. And it's like, well, it's a bass amp. And like, well, no, we use it for guitar.
So they were talking about
that. It was kind of funny. But they actually made that amp again. They have the amp, so you can use it if you want to train. It's heavy.
And I believe there was a V4 guitar amp, actually.
Yeah. Well, the difference was the reverb.
Reverb, yeah. And but it was a powerful amp, that's for sure. It definitely did it. Yeah.
Now, what guitar were you using back then?
Well, both Paul and I were endorsed by Ibanez at that point.
Okay.
We were early endorsees, and they were making us custom Ibanezes. So the ones we were using the most were modeled after old Epiphone cornets.
Mm-hmm.
And they had, if you know anything about the Epiphone cornet, it's like a SG where the last fret meets the body, and that's the access is so good on them.
Uh-huh.
But the problem is that the neck wasn't as stable as like a Strat or a Les Paul. So if you leaned forward or backwards, it would pitch sharp or flat a little bit.
Oh, wow.
But they were really easy to play and really fast. And
was it sturdy enough with that much play in it?
Well, now, a quick story on that, which is that was my first endorsement. And I think I was 21 at the time or 20, somewhere in there. And I took it back to my family in Indiana. And I was showing my dad, like, look at this. I've got my own signature guitar from Ibanez. And it had a whammy bar on it that pulled back.
Mm-hmm.
And I hit a harmonic and pulled the whammy bar back. And the neck broke off at the body right in front of him. And he looks at me and goes, nice endorsement there. And turned around and turned the football game on. So it was they actually improved the right after that, they improved the neck joint on it, and they started. Actually, I think they use some of the technology now where it has that shaved down
mm-hmm.
access in the back. I think they were experimenting at that point with it, and they got it right on the next one.
Oh, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you used that for quite a while.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. But in the studio, did you use anything else, or you just use those?
It was basically those on the first album I did, Second Heat. We were actually using an actual Epiphone cornet. So
cool.
And one of the funny things about it is, at the time the budget we were on with Shrapnel Records, which Mike Varney was awesome
mm-hmm.
Up at Prairie Sun, we did the album in 110 hours mixed. And so literally we had one guitar set up, and Paul and I were cutting our guitars at like maybe midnight till 6 in the morning for a few days in a row. And we would just hand the guitar back and forth through the same setup. And we just sounded nothing alike through the same exact guitar and amp setup and everything. And we would hand it back and forth. Now you double this or you harmonize this in your rhythm. And it was pretty interesting.
No, that's true. Your hands, yes, determine the sound.
Mm-hmm, big time.
Now, you were using the V4s in the studio for that, or are you using smaller?
No, in the studio... we kind of caught the early age of the mods, of the mod amps, and for me it was the first time to see it. And we used two 70s, I think like 72, 73 Lee Jackson modded Marshalls.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny because all these guitar like amp legends nowadays, like Bogner, when I met Reinhold, he mm-hmm. was modifying Marshalls in Hollywood. That he was fresh over. And before he started his company or anything, but he had a mean mod on the Marshalls.
Mm-hmm,
and,
mm-hmm.
But the ones we used were Lee Jackson's at the time. They were incredible because great anybody sound. Who knows the Marshalls from back in the day,
yeah,
it wasn't instant tone when you what you heard on albums sometimes. You know, you had to turn them up really loud to get sound or else use a distortion pedal. And to me, a mod was just like, wow, this is...
Yeah, I remember there was a guy who was based out of, I think, Guitar Center, the old Guitar Center on Sunset, I think Blaha, that did a mod where he basically did a mid-boost, which gave you a little more sustain.
Yeah.
Because the Marshalls always sounded good, just cranked, but
yeah,
you couldn't always do that.
Yeah.
It just was so loud.
Yeah.
But they really did. I mean, especially those older Plexis were great.
Oh, they're awesome, yeah. I remember the first Marshall I got as a kid. I was listening to Van Halen 1 and, Randy Rhoads and some of these other guys, and I thought instantly when I plugged into it, it was going to be awesome like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I had it in my house at my mom and dad's place. I had it kind of kind of low, and I remember putting it on. It's like, wow, this is more like Chet Atkins or something than it is Van Halen. What's up here with this, mm-hmm. you know? But mm-hmm. We figured it out eventually.
Well, let me play another clip. This one is called Scarified. And can you tell me a little bit about this? This band was...
Racer X. Still.
This is still Racer X? Okay. Well, let me play it,
yeah,
and you can get an idea, see what I pulled from it. Great sound.
Thank you.
Now, was that the type of thing where you would basically, is that the time when you would hand the guitar over and you would do the different parts?
That was it right there, yes.
That's pretty amazing, not doing that at the same time and still getting that that tight. That is just really, really, really tight.
We had a band full of players in that band. It was, obviously, everybody's went on to other bands. Scott Travis ended up being the drummer for Judas Priest.
Mm-hmm.
Juan Alderetti is the bass player for Mars Volta and Deltron 3030. And Jeff Martin went on to play, as the singer, went on to play drums for Badlands and Michael Schenker and, mm-hmm. and Leslie West and a few others. So it's and Paul Gilbert, obviously, is Paul Gilbert and Mr. Big and all that. And It was exciting to be 20 years old and hook up with those players.
You were in a group of people that just went all directions.
And that was, Scott and John, the bass and drums were laid in single takes. So think about that, without a click or anything, those guys.
Yeah, there was no click.
Yeah,
it was
awesome.
But you even, it's really tight, but it's the feel. Mm. I mean, the groove is there.
Yes.
And I you know, click tracks work. I've used them. Yeah. We've had to make it sound musical, but there's nothing like that type of sync, yeah. you know, where yeah. the guys are in sync. Let us take a listen to another clip. I'm going to pull out 1 Foot in the Grave, and I'll play this one. And where did it go? I can't see it now. But, here it is. Now, tell me what you were using there. That's a killer 12 string.
That was a Gibson 12 string.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the exact model or anything like that. That's been a while back. That was actually produced by a guy named Richard Wolf, and mm-hmm. he got his big. His big claim to fame was Belle Biv DeVoe. He was producing them. So mm-hmm. we were kind of taking a different angle. And you know, around 1993 or 94, we were getting really interested in a lot of the sampling and mixing some styles together and stuff. And so we had a guy named John Inglesby mm-hmm. as the engineer, who went on to engineer for Elton John and a few other big notables. As an engineer, it's a pretty big gig, and was just a genius behind the console as an engineer. He was great. And
now, at this time, were you kind of watching what they were doing, or were you pretty much what you heard was coming out on tape? I mean, were you getting what you wanted on tape? Because we were talking before the show. One of the reasons I learned engineering was basically I would play something and I'd get my sound in a session, and when they mixed it, it sounded totally different. Like, what happened to my guitar? It doesn't sound anything.
Right. It was right around the time, I think I'd mentioned this earlier when I got here, that I had injured my hand a little bit in mm-hmm. Racer X, and I it was starting to get worse, and I wasn't being able to play at my full potential. So I started looking at engineering and wanting to build studios to kind of stay involved in music.
Mm-hmm.
So at this time, I was starting to pay a little bit of attention, like what mics were being used. And, you know, I can still recite. Obviously, I paid enough attention to know that it was a TAC Scorpion board at this guy's studio.
Oh, that's cool. I remember those.
Mm-hmm, a 3M machine.
Mm-hmm.
And he had an EMU, one of the early EMUs, the EMAX 3, I think, or something like that, which he was using as a sampler.
Oh, wow.
And so I was getting my information on at that point. I wasn't just the guitar player in the room going like, cool, where do I play? And, you know, all right, I'm interested in what's making these sounds and what's capturing them, you know, at the same time.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, your tone was pretty consistent, even though you're doing a lot of different things. And we'll show some of the these are the different sessions that you had done besides Racer X. But, I mean, you have a pretty consistent tone. I mean, a lot of that's your playing, but still.
Right.
Those engineers were capturing it because, as we well know, just what they do on the board, they could really change it radically.
Big time. I was kind of a Marshall guy really throughout my whole early part of my life. That I mean, Marshall kind of ruled back then mm-hmm. as far as a hard rock amp. Oddly enough, after Racer X, I kind of switched back to stock Marshalls. And I started to figure out, like, oh, stock Marshalls are really cool. You know what I mean? You just got to know how to what you got to go for with them. And I think at around that, the time we did that track, I was using one of the 30th anniversaries, which were the purple ones. You remember when they came out with those? And mm-hmm. they had made a special run with all the brass ones that were, like, real fancy. But I just kind of had the regular purple ones. And those amps just sounded phenomenal to me. Some of the best guitar sounds I had was through that. Just cranked up really loud with a great engineer putting the mics in the right mm-hmm. place. And it was unbelievable.
And you were getting enough gain and sustain from it just cranked.
Absolutely. Well, those had the master volumes at that point. Mm-hmm. And I think they had a little beefed up. They had the 3 channels on that. So they had the red channel was like, yeah, look out. This is the one with the goods, you know.
because that's a lot of people that complain with the plexis. You really, when you turn them up, it got that really brown sound from the power tubes, and it had the sustain. But it was you had to really crank it to get it up there.
Well, I knew when you say the brown sound, I knew Jose, who worked on Eddie's amps, and he was just on Hortense Street down the street from my studio. So I used to take my Marshalls to him, and he would. Obviously, being a fan of Eddie back when I was growing up, it was like, I got to go to Jose and have him mod something. And I'd be sitting there all the time because he was, you know, this kind of unassuming older Argentinian guy or something. And he would be in his back workshop working on these amps. And I'd be, come on, Jose, what'd you really do to his amps? I know you got a secret that you're not letting on. He goes, no, I just beefed them up to where they could hold the power at 10 all the time. And he would show me. And I would play through the amps, and it was like, I'm still not buying it. Come on, Jose, what's the secret? No, they sounded phenomenal. And and I tried some of those amps, and you know, it was with good results.
Are you still using Marshalls today, or are you using something else?
A mixture. I have a few different ones. I've obviously with the boutique amps out nowadays, it's kind of luxurious to be able to plug into an amp and go like, wow, instant hot rotted amazing tone. So, you know, I've tried the Ingles. I thought they were really vicious sounding. The Bogners are great. I've used off and on. I'm really impressed with Friedman stuff.
I was going to say, if you're a Marshall guy, you probably have checked out Metropolis and Friedman.
Yeah, I'm actually, when my wife and I were in Japan this last year, they had one of our friends over there is a Friedman, is the guy who does Friedman and Bogner over there, and we got to play through them for an afternoon at Musette Japan, and the Friedman was just unbelievable. You know, I've yet to meet Dave yet, but I know he's a genius with that kind of sound coming out of those amps. So,
well, you should come to the LA Amp Show they have every year.
Yeah,
he's there.
I've been there a couple times. I missed this last year, but I saw some videos on YouTube, and it was like, wow, the brown eye. I think there's the brown eye, then there's the...
Yeah, he's got a lot of interesting names. Yeah. He's done the ZZ Top world.
Yeah.
I think Friedman was the one that Dan Bull collaborated with.
Yeah, the new
he has
whiskey.
65 amps has a new whiskey that's a high gain. He made a high gain amp.
Yeah.
And it was sweet. We tried it over at NAMM.
Well, it looks like it's like the battle of the heads are getting smaller now, too. Everybody's going for those mini heads that have the same sort of impact as the big ones, but you can carry it without, you know, without
it's
a dollar.
It's controllable.
Yeah.
It's controllable. No, that's true. Now, let's go... Let's move ahead now. Now I'm going to go into your engineering, and I'm going to play a clip from the one that won the Grammy. This is the clip from Motorhead Whiplash, and I just want to make a shout out to Debbie and Alicia, the American Girls. They really love your stuff, and I'll ask the question on here. We had talked about it before, but they wanted to know if you went drinking with Lemmy. They love Lemmy.
Oh yeah, Lemmy's the greatest, man. He's one of a kind. He's quintessential real rock and roll. And I will have to say that some of the best memories as an engineer and producer was being in the studio with Motorhead, because those guys are great and Lemmy's awesome.
All right, let's hear this clip. This is Whiplash. That was incredible.
Go get them, Phil.
If anybody out there wasn't awake, they're awake now.
Yeah.
His wah-wah work is killer. Now, let me ask you, how did you approach engineering that band in terms of the miking and the sound? There's, and we're going to see this later in your music, too. You've got walls of just guitars, but you can hear everything.
Well, with Phil, it generally starts with a 6-pack of Mike's Hard Lemonade, and then we move from there to Miking the Amp. With Lemmy, it's Maker's Mark and Coke.
So, okay, there you go.
But I think on that one, Phil actually was playing through the Studio Marshalls. Obviously, I think they were either on tour or just coming off, so they didn't have their gear readily available at the time.
Was this your studio? Or
Yes. Okay. At the time, I was partners with Bob Kulick.
Mm-hmm.
Great guy. His brother, you probably know, was in Kiss, Bruce Kulick.
Mm-hmm.
Bob played in Alice Cooper, Meatloaf, and multiple other bands. So we had a pretty good arsenal of amps. Obviously, we were a couple guitar players in the Valley. So, at the time, we had it ISO'd off Marshall, in a couple rooms away, and we had a modded Marshall. I don't know who actually did the mod, but it might have been. It eludes me right now.
How did you mic it?
I believe on that track, I was using 57 and a 421 combination.
Close or pulled back a little bit?
Both were close. Both of them were evenly close because I was doing the phase thing where I would go in with the headphones and just have the hiss of the amp going through my phones. And if you flip it out of phase and then go in the room and move the mics, it'll all of a sudden cancel the phase to zero. And then you go back and you can unflip the phase and voila, you got the thick tone.
Mm-hmm.
So, generally, I think at the time I was using, I was a big fan of Wade at Chandler, his products. So I had a few of the EMI pre's, which I thought were really cool. Some of the early ones, they're nice. And I had some of the Chandler 1073 clones.
What board were you using?
At the time, this was when we were using actually Billy Sherwood's studio right before we took it over. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know Billy Sherwood the guy with Yes and a phenomenal guitar. Multi-instrumentalist.
He has a couple of new albums that were just killer. Yeah.
Billy's awesome. And he had a Tascam, one of the M3000s or something. It was their flagship big board from Tascam. And it was heavily modded. Ah. So it was modded to be almost like an SSL. And it sounded really, it was a big punchy
killer.
Board. Yeah.
Did you have any problems with the layering of the guitars keeping them to be able to hear them, or pretty much the way they played, did the track lay well, or did you have to mess with it?
Well, what's interesting with Motorhead is that we obviously know Lemmy's signature sound is not focusing so much on like a lower boomy bass, but more of like a distorted, here's a 200-watt Marshall turned on 10 with my Rickenbacker being played at full tilt. And strangely enough, the way that those three play together, Mickey, Phil, and Lemmy, it works just right. You don't have to do a whole lot. Mm-hmm. And that's generally what I found in the studio. If they're doing it right, you don't have to do a whole lot, you know.
Right.
And that's with them. It's the easiest session I ever did.
Okay, I'm going to play another clip from another session. Totally. Oh, we'll go to. Well, let's go ahead.
Yeah, we should probably go to break, and then maybe when we come back, we could actually have Bruce play.
That's true. Well, we'll get to that too. We'll be right back.
Do you want to get the best possible tone from your acoustic instrument? Guitar Hummer is a guitar stand that does more than just rest your guitar. It creates a gentle but continuous vibration that is equivalent to playing your instrument all day, every day. This concentrates years of seasoning into mere weeks, improving tone and sustain. You may not be able to afford a vintage guitar, but you now can achieve vintage sound. But don't take our word for it. Try it for 60 days, and if you don't notice a marked difference, return it for a full refund. Go to guitarhummer.com for more information or to purchase.
Hi, I'm Richard Kotze from the Winery Dogs, and you are listening to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast.
Rock and roll!
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. That was live. That was Bruce Beat playing live at Killer Tone, even with my little mini Marshall.
Yeah, man.
It sounds good. Now, getting back to what we were talking about, I'm going to play another clip. This is, if I'm correct, this is Buck Cherry.
Yes.
For the movies. And a little bit different type of sound. And we'll talk about how you approach this one. Now, you can tell a good engineer because that snare is hitting me in the chest. That's a great, great sound. Now, let me ask you about this one. How did you approach this band?
Well, I actually met this band when they were called Sparrow.
Okay.
So that was pre their record deal. And a friend of mine called up and said, would I be interested in recording them? And he said, Ben Harper's producing them. Mm-hmm. And at this time they were working with Ben, and I was a big fan of Ben Harper, so I was like, wow, that would be awesome. Let's I don't know who the band is, but if they're working with Ben, that's good with me. So and they came in, and sure enough, there was Ben, and he came with a bunch of vintage, really like amazing vintage gear.
Cool.
Super old guitars, super old. He was a big fan of the old Tweed Fenders. So he had some really nice old, like, 50s era Fenders or somewhere in that year range. And then Keith was the guitar player, and obviously Josh, and I forget who all the rest was in the band. They've kind of flipped members since then. But we did all the demos, and they got a record deal, and then they went to record with Terry Date. Their debut album, and they came back after the session. Well, I thought it was funny. They called me from the studio and was like, how did you get the guitar sound? And I'm like, dude, you're with Terry Date. You're in good hands, man. Trust me. But they came back after the sessions and said they wanted to cut a couple more songs as demos. And we cut the songs, and they ended up on the album as singles, actually. And I was using... I think at the time we were using a lot of vintage gear. I remember Keith was using a Expandora pedal, if you remember those. Mm-hmm. They were kind of popular back in that time. I think on them, I had some of the old silver 414s, if you remember those.
Yes.
I had some of those. I think I used one of those on his cabinet and a 57. Once again, pretty close mic'd. You know, at that time, they were looking for that AC/DC sort of. That was their big influence. They really liked early AC/DC, where it's that really in-your-face, dry kind of rock and roll sound, and which I was a big fan of. So it was really cool, you know. So that's what we went for.
This was at the same studio that you did.
This was a little smaller studio I had in Van Nuys. Also,
board were you using on this one?
I had a little Allen and Heath, it was one of the first ones where it was automatable, or you could automate it. That's a word. You could automate it with a computer, and the faders weren't moving faders. It really was kind of early automation, so it crashed all the time because the computers just weren't powerful then. I used it mainly how a lot of guys would use a Mackie after that, where they would remote record with a lot of good pre's and just monitor through it. So, but it still sounded fantastic, really. I think at the time I had a bunch of 1272 Neves and a few API pre's, a bunch of stuff, you know, just classic,
really, that's nice stuff,
classic gear.
Now I know this is a guitar show, but I have to know how you mic those drums. I love that snare, that kick, that snare.
I'm trying to think. I believe at the time I rented some stuff for this session. So mm-hmm. I think I might have used 87s on the overheads, mm-hmm. 57 top, 421 bottom snare, mm-hmm. classic sort of setup. Mm-hmm. Or not 421, but 451, I'm sorry, the little pencil mic, right? Yeah. D112 inside and a FET 47 out. So it was really kind of a classic rock. Mm-hmm. And then 421s, toms, and some, a couple rooms. I think I had some TLM 193s on the rooms.
Did you use the room mics a lot on that?
Not really, because my room was really small. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. we put them up and they're in there, but we didn't really feature, because you could tell that it was like, wow, this is in a...
Because the snare is getting a little... it sounds like it's leakage from the other mics, but it's getting a room sound out of that snare, which is really, it's a really solid sound. Now... we're going to move forward into your album. I took some clips from your newest album, The Order of Control, which now we looked at your work as a guitar player. We looked at your work as an engineer. Now let's look at it, putting it both together and doing this album, because you're engineering and you're playing on there. So I'm going to play a riff. This is actually called Blind As We Watched, and I'm going to play just a little quick segment from this just to give you an idea of the sound. Now, I want to let everybody know, I'm pulling little clips. There's just guitar everywhere on this album. So I'm just pulling little segments, just trying to give you an idea of a sampling. But you really should check this album out. It's got, if you're a guitar player, it's got everything in it. I mean, there's all sorts of really cool things in it. Anyway, your approach to this album. What were you using, first of all? Different guitars, different amps, or pretty much the Marshall thing? Or were you doing...
pretty much the kitchen sink on this one. It was a real labor of love on this album. Mm-hmm. First of all, I'd like to give a shout out to Music Theories and Mascot Records for mm-hmm. getting mm-hmm. this record out properly and connecting with so many great people. But I started it, and I actually recorded all the basics at a friend of mine's here in town called Willie Bass. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know who Willie Bass is, but he was in a band called Black Sheep, and he had various gunslingers back in the day in his band, from Slash to Paul Gilbert was in his band for a minute, and Kurt James, various other guys out there. And he had a giant collection of really vintage gear, old RCA stuff. You know, we were talking earlier about how cool some of these really old vintage tube pre's and stuff. So all the stuff you're hearing, a lot of it was cut V76s and mm-hmm. V72s and the old German pre's. Mm-hmm. And as far as guitar stuff, I used everything on it. I used everything from actual plugins, even where I was using the 11 program. There's tracks where there's hints of the 11 on there. There's but there's also modded Marshalls. There's Ingles. There's stock 9 JCM 900s.
Wow.
There's a little bit of everything. There's some Bogners on there. There's I cut at various studios, and I believe it or not, in the age of being able to record at home, I did a lot of guitars DI, and I would reamp at big studios, and which was obviously gives you the luxury of not burning the clock at the studio and coming out of pocket on everything, but it it enabled me to try some different things on the reamp mm-hmm. you know, which I was a little skeptical at first. You know, I've reamped before in my day, but you know, there's something about that connection with a live amp, and when you're catching feedback, and it's like, yeah, this is the moment.
Just what you were doing when you came back from the break. I mean, you're responding to how the amp is responding.
Right, absolutely.
It's hard to do that.
Right.
And anticipate.
Right.
You know?
And so it was a little bit of everything. You know, really, be honest. I used the Fujigen guitars that are from Japan.
That's which, what you have here.
Yes, which has a pretty long history in Japan. They've built,
what kind of pickups are you said you changed your pickups?
Oh, I put some new Seymours in. I'm a dedicated JB user, mm-hmm. and I have been for a very long time. I think Seymour builds the best pickups.
And then what do you have in the middle position and the neck position?
These are two vintage Seymours.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, they're just like.
Can you go through and just give us a little idea of the tonality on them?
Sure. What's that?
Just go through the different pickups and show us what you.
So the bridge pickup on the on this is the JB. And then we have the combination of the two with the middle and the bridge.
Now, do you have a coil splitter for the JB?
Yes, for this would be JB coil splitter. And then, obviously, neck position.
Getting a lot of overtones, it's nice. It gets a good squawk to it. I like that. That's really cool. Now, this is a great guitar. Fujigen,
and it's FGN is their other line. It's the one they're trying to push worldwide. I think it's a little easier to pronounce.
And is this a model that they're a signature model, or are you just a standard?
This is a stock model of theirs. It's made out of heavy ash,
mm-hmm.
and it's you know a rosewood fingerboard. It's a really simple guitar, to be honest with you, but it just plays really well. And not much else to be said on that, really. It's got
pretty,
a Wilkinson.
It's just a basic.
Bare bones, really,
yeah. Let me play a clip, and then we're from the album. Again, this is to give you an idea of just the wall of sound. This is called the Grand Reversal. This is a clip from there. Who needs a keyboard player? I mean, I'm just kidding. But the reason I played that clip is, how many guitar tracks are there on that take?
There's a pretty sizable amount. The wall of guitars, obviously.
Because how did you, as an engineer, how did you get it? So I can hear all the different guys mm-hmm. going on in there.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. I think because I spent a lot of time with it. Maybe that's the true answer.
Now, are you using the same guitar, or are you using different guitars for those parts?
You know what? Surprisingly enough, that was two guitars. I was using an old Ibanez PF300 from the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more of a Les Paul type mm-hmm, thing. Mm-hmm. Very heavy, slightly chambered. Once again, with Seymour's in it. And the blend of those two, and maybe a Les Paul occasionally. I have a 78 standard that was JB loaded. And
because it's just, I mean, you can hear if you, when you get the album, when you hear the album, and it just, there's all these different parts, and you can hear there's several guitars doing those big chords. Mm-hmm. it's not just one guitar, and it's not mush. It's clear, and then you're doing all those little parts, and you know it's pretty intricate, and the counterpoint's really good. So it's amazing how you get that really clean. Did it kind of fall into the mix, or did you have to play with it a lot? Did it pretty much mix itself?
Well, I got to give a shout out because I engineered and recorded the whole thing, but I handed it off at the end, and so my friend James Lugo. Mm-hmm. Who has SSL Online Mixing .com. He's based out of Raleigh. He mixed it, and then in conjunction, I did online with him, and we did the tweaks and everything. And he had the same thing, same sort of remarks as you did. Like, wow, dude, this is a lot of guitars. And I was like, yeah, you know, I know I spent too much time on it.
No, it sounded good, though. I mean, there's not too many albums I've heard where it's that full.
Thank you.
Now, we're almost out of time, but I want to play something that has nothing to do with guitar. It has to do with your guest here, too, Paul Foreman, that played bass.
Dave Foreman.
Dave, I can't even read my writing. Sorry, Dave. Anyway, so this is the name of this clip is 1 Minute Morning. It's pretty much most of the clip. It's actually around a minute. Mm-hmm. It's really kind of cool. You got to hear this. This is great. Here we go. That is hip. That
Come
is
on, man. Bass solo on the record, but multi-track bass solo.
Multi-track, counterpoint, and orchestration in the back. It's a beautiful, beautiful piece. Was that amped, or is that just direct? Or what did you use on, what bass did you use on that, number one?
I use a Fender Jazz.
Fender Jazz? Mm-hmm. And then was that mic'd from an amp or direct?
It was direct.
Yeah,
Okay, because, yeah. I mean, it's just clean.
DI and believe it or not,
clean.
That was actually DI'd through a mini M box.
Oh, cool!
Yeah, so that was like we had a little bitty remote place where we were doing the dubs, and he hopped on the bass. We just DI'd it right up on that little mini M box. We went to town.
That is excellent. And in the album, there's some other stuff. We don't have time. We're actually out of time now. But there's some orchestration that you did. Just beautiful stuff, and you got to check out what he's doing because he did all the string.
Oh yeah, Dave's the man. He's my partner in crime.
Killer,
here, man.
Killer
we're doing
stuff.
It.
Really,
yeah.
we were talking about that before the show. It's just amazing stuff. Before we go, because we're out of time, and obviously we didn't even touch the surface of what you are about. So you definitely have to come back again.
Awesome, love.
Real quick, tell me, you have a new album. You're working on a new album right now.
Yes, it's the follow up to the Order of Control. It'll be the Order of Control Volume 2.
Okay, Order of Control Volume 2. And you have any idea when that's going to be out, or you don't know yet?
Not known yet, but it's pretty much the writing is nearing the final phase.
Okay. So. Because when that is done, we definitely should have you come back, and awesome. We'll talk about that.
Anytime.
I just want to mention real quick, www.brucebouillet.com is his website. He's also on Facebook, YouTube, Flickr, at Bruce Bouillet. I'm trying to read it. And he's also on SoundCloud, and all your stuff, I presume, is on Amazon, iTunes, all that stuff.
Yeah.
So check out this stuff. This album, I recommend it. If you're a guitar player, there's all sorts of cool things that he's doing, and he's merging a lot of different styles. And just if you want to learn how to layer and do a little more intricate leads and stuff, this is definitely something
to
listen from.
If you're a bass player, you got Dave on bass, and or if you're a drummer, you got Glenn Sobel, who's playing with Alice Cooper now. So.
Yeah, and I just touched the surface. There's a lot of changes, time signature changes, some really cool stuff on there. So I'm going to leave us with.
We should have him play out, and then you can play your clip after that.
Okay, I'll let him start and I'll crossfade it over.
And then next week we have Phil Chen, right?
Phil Chen. He played on Blow by Blow, another bass player.
And then we should thank our sponsors, Sweetwater and Guitar Hummer.
Guitar
Hummer.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody. Go ahead.